understands that the way to ensure oppression of a people is to label them and dehumanize them and put them into certain archetypes so that it makes sense to have a racist, oppressive stance against them. So for Black women, generally we see a couple of archetypes called controlling images. We see the mammy. We see that with like movies like The Help, Gone with the Wind, right? We have the Jezebel. That's the hypersexualized Black woman who seduced master into her bed, right? Right.
Seduce the master.
And then we have the angry Black woman, right? And so we also have, you know, there's other controlling images like
Yeah, the diva, the bitch,
the welfare queen and all of that.
The
All of
weak
those
woman.
images are used to ensure the intersectionality of oppression for Black women and gender and sometimes economics as well. Welcome to episode 9 of Breaking It
Yes,
Down with DJ and Courtney.
we are back.
We are back. And if you are back, if you've been listening, you know that we like to start each episode with a segment called What's Still Cooking, which gives DJ and I a chance to highlight something we may have read, seen, or experienced. And what's still cooking for me is Bobby Brown's visit to the Red Table Talk. So this week, or last week, Bobby Brown sat down with Gammy, Jada, and Willow and shared some information and actually confirmed some of DJ's and I's suspicions that we shared in episode one. So he
Doing the
went to the
documentary.
table. Yeah. So when we, re in episode one, we reviewed the latest Whitney Bobby Christina Lifetime documentary. So go back and listen to episode one if you haven't. Shameless plug. but Bobby Brown went to the table to actually discuss the death of his son, Bobby Brown Jr., who passed last November 2020, from a drug overdose. He says that Bobby Brown Jr. was actually not like a, he wasn't dependent on drugs. He wasn't addicted. He was a recreational user, an experimenter, and he had a lethal dose of fentanyl in his whatever he was using. So Bobby Brown was urging people to be aware of using street drugs because they're often laced with strong chemicals that have no regulation. But then he went on to share that he believed that Nick Gordon was responsible for Bobby Christina and Whitney Houston's death. He also shared something that was really tragic for me, where, you know, he said that he and Christina had been distant, but they had plans to reconnect. And 2 days before she died, was when it happened, or 2 days after. Like, if she had been living for 2 more days, it probably wouldn't have happened because she would have been with
With
Bobby.
the father.
Yeah. But you know, but it seems to be that Bobby Brown's in a good place. He seems to be healing, and he's also completely sober of narcotics and alcohol.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, that's amazing.
Yeah, because usually when Bobby Brown's in the news, it's about
Yeah, but it looks
the
like
opposite.
he's in a good place. He's in a good place.
Well, happy for him.
The other thing that's still cooking for me is the White House issued its first proclamation ever on Black maternal health. So last week, April 11th through 16th, was Black Maternal Health Week, and Vice President Kamala Harris hosted a roundtable on the issue alongside Susan Rice, who's the director of the Domestic Policy Council. This is a major deal because the U United States continues to have the highest maternal mortality rate amongst developed nations. And it's driven largely in part by the high mortality rates among Black mothers. In addition to the proclamation and the roundtable, the administration outlined several actions to specifically address the maternal health issues through the American Rescue Plan, which passed in March, and it includes $30 million for implicit bias training for healthcare providers and a provision that allows states to expand postpartum Medicaid coverage from 60 days to a full year.
I wonder why that's happening to Black women, especially in this country.
Racism. Yeah. Racism and white supremacy. Yeah, that's the issue.
For everything.
Yeah, almost. Pretty much. You can always, you can, all lines go towards racism and white supremacy.
Well, maybe white supremacy isn't the reason why Ray Gay John Page.
That is a name. It's a name.
Left Bridgerton. But he has. He won't show up in season two of Bridgerton. And before I get into that, I wanted to just say, yeah, you're coming to my Sunday brunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I know you're not vegetarian now, but I was trying to mix it up a little bit, have a few vegetarian things, non-vegetarian things. But above all, I will be serving mimosas.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to you coming to my Sunday brunch. Okay. But back to Bridgerton. So my friend loved the show and she told me all about it. And so it's been renewed for season two and season three, even before season two was finished being shooting. So Netflix is.
So wait, I thought it was also renewed for season four too, right?
Yeah, season three and four, mm-hmm. while season two is being shot. So wow. Netflix is really, really liking the results this show has been giving them. So. As I was saying, Reggae John Page, mm-hmm. this character, Duke of Hastings, is not returning for the second season. There has been some discussions about the reasons behind that.
Yep.
And it could be all the attention he's been getting, mm-hmm. And the scripts they've probably been rolling in since his SNL introduction, where it was all the hoops and hollering. His camp is saying that the second season will focus more on Lord Anthony Bridgerton, played by Jonathan Bailey, with Simone Ashley playing Kate Sharma, his leading lady. And I guess John Page, Reggae, okay, that's like a crazy name for me, Reggae John Page, wants bigger fish to fry. And
yeah.
My advice would be don't burn your bridges. Or better yet, you're Bridgerton.
Oh,
don't bring
DJ.
I know, corny, right? I know,
but I had very to go there, corny. Right?
with Shonda Rhimes, because Katherine Hagel made the same mistake when she said some. Well, he hasn't said any negative things, but she did leave the show in a negative way, and I haven't seen her do well after that much at all. So
yeah,
this was good one for me.
Okay. Anything else?
That's, oh yes, I know. I did want to ask you because I think you already got your vaccine already.
I am vaccinated, two and through.
And I was waiting to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccination, but I heard that seven people have received the shot for Johnson & Johnson, and they got blood clots. And you were saying that you heard six, and I said it may be six because one has recently died of the blood clots. And so I probably may have to settle with getting the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine instead. And I know each one sort of attacks the virus differently, but I plan to do a little research before I decide which one, but it may be those two instead of the Johnson & Johnson one shot that, that's, I think, is more convenient, but
yeah, the two wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad, so I'm glad you're gonna get vaccinated, though.
Yeah, I'm scared. I have to be honest because I just, and not because of all the things that are going on, but usually when I get a flu shot, I get sick like two or three days, and I just don't like that feeling symptoms. Of being sick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the reason why. Just knowing that you want to be sick.
Well, you're not. Everyone responds differently, so you may not. You may not.
We'll keep hope alive.
We will. All right. So let's move into our first topic. As most people know, on April 11th, 2021, Dante Wright, who's a 20-year-old African-American man, was fatally shot by police officer Kimberly Potter during a traffic stop in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. After he re-entered his car, he was shot, and his car then began to accelerate, collided with another, and hit a concrete barrier, and he was pronounced dead at the scene.
Wow.
The following day, police said that Potter meant to use her taser, but accidentally grabbed her gun instead, striking Wright with one shot to his chest. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, Potter and Brooklyn Center Police Chief resigned from their positions. And then on April 14th, Potter was charged with second-degree manslaughter, arrested, booked, and released on $100,000 bail. Protests, of course, happened. And, you know, we've already talked about this show, on this show, you know, that something has to change, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't think that we could not talk about this. And I just want to talk about it in a different way. And I just feel like, is there going to be something different that's going to come out of this? So my question to you is, what are some immediate changes you would like to see with how policing is done?
Well, we definitely need law enforcement reform, and especially how our officers are trained. I think that a more constructive approach on how law enforcement interacts with the community they are serving, and conducting thorough and recurring Black background investigations before police officers can even join the police force.
Yeah, yeah. I think those are needed. And again, you already know from episode 2 that I believe that, no, yeah, episode 2, that we need to defund. We do need to deprioritize how much money they get, but they also do need more investment in training. And I think, you know, I think you told me this about how like background checks are really needed, because someone could get fired from one jurisdiction and then go to another and just get hired without, you know, because they're not doing the background checks to recognize that someone is problematic.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely think those are things that we can see happen. I also think that like what we mentioned, and I think we're just going to be referring to all of our old episodes.
Yeah.
Like episode 4, qualified immunity is a problem. And I feel like if that wasn't there, if there was known that accountability is going to be made, then that is going to be a strong motivator for change.
You know? And when you said defund the police, I like when you said in an earlier episode, just refer back to our previous episode, episode 2, that you said when we defund the police, we're going to also fund other programs.
Yes. That use the money. That's right. Mm-hmm. Use the money from the police, which is, they have too much to be doing such a poor job, to build up other programs so that communities have what they need and that the police aren't overtaxed.
Right. Yeah. With mental health people, you know, people shouldn't be showing up to the
education system. You know, like those things, we already know that if a neighborhood has a good education system, the crime rate is lower. Right. And it's the converse is also true. If if the neighborhood has a poor education center system, the crime rate is higher.
Yeah.
So why don't we invest in those things? And therefore, then we won't need the police as much.
Yeah. So I like that idea there. But I think we need to seriously take a look at our judicial system, like qualified immunity and policing. As you said, we discussed in season 1,
episode 4.
This season, episode 4, and this increasing warning for monetary compensation over justice and type
of mentality. Tell me more about that.
So when I say that, I mean when families of those victims who are impacted by unfair and illegal policing practices.
Yeah.
When some would rather settle out of court rather than pursue criminal charges, or even seeking a civil suit rather than pursuing criminal charges, that potentially denies them the ability to publicize all the details and injustices that have occurred.
But DJ, do you really believe that families are going to get a fair trial? I mean, like, think about. We only have to look back 2 years, and there's at least 5 people who have been harmed unjustly that are Black. Have they received justice in the courts? Do you really think that that is like feasible?
I think that silencing your story, and because you know when you agree to that settlement, you may not be legally eligible to pursue any further action. The case is closed. And depending on the terms of the agreement, the details of the agreement and what happened remains private, and it cannot become a public, it cannot become any public record. And the settlement is final, you know, the decision cannot be appealed like it can be in a court. So I think that it even though what you're saying is true, but I think that in the long run it's going to benefit us, especially the Black community, when we can publicize the story instead of having it silenced by
Interesting. I mean,
then.
that is an interesting take. I don't know. I mean, the financial compensation does not bring back a life. It
No.
doesn't. But the money has to come from somewhere. So that mean like
And
I
you can
feel
still
like
get money. If you do a criminal case and win, you still can pursue a civil suit, you know? But I'm just saying that some are not even pursuing a civil suit.
but
They
that's because of
just.
qualified immunity. Qualified immunity makes it so that you can't pursue a civil suit.
In certain cases, yes. In certain cases, you can't, you cannot. But if they know that, if the case, if those lawyers know that, they're not even going to settle out of court with you because they know you're going to lose. If they're sitting out of court with you, they know that they're going to lose in the end, and they would rather pay the money up front than having the details of what happened publicized. That's what they're trying to do, trying to silence you by giving you this money.
That's
Now,
interesting. I don't know if that's true for every case, and
no, not every case.
I can definitely relate to just having the peace that not even it's not even that it brings peace. It's that the money can bring something to help with moving on, right? And I hear your argument, and I don't think I totally disagree. And I mean, there are so many families that have been impacted in this way.
Right.
If they were to collectively tell their stories, would that have a more meaningful impact on changing hearts and minds so that more action is done to actually bring change? I don't know. I think that's an interesting idea to continue to think about because, you know, so many families are impacted. Like what I've learned recently is that George Floyd's girlfriend was Dante's teacher.
Wow.
So, like, there's an interconnectedness. And Fred Hampton's mother babysat Emmett Till.
Wow.
So, there's like one degree of separation in these families that are being impacted, which makes me very, it actually makes me very scared because, you know, it could be any of us, it could be
Right.
anyone,
Yeah.
you know, it
Any
doesn't
law-abiding
matter.
citizen.
Say that again.
Any law-abiding citizen.
Right. Just
You
because
know.
you're black, you are a target.
All right.
And so, you know, I just think about, I think the risk, just going back to that other, that your point, the risk that families take if they don't take the money and they pursue a criminal case and then lose, then they've lost twice, you know, they've lost their loved one and then they lost justice. And so I think the financial compensation is something that feels akin to justice, even though it isn't. You know, it's something rather than nothing. But you're, but I hear you. I hear you with the whole, if you tell your story, you have an opportunity to make a difference in a way, and taking the money may take that away from you.
Right. So I think one of the things that we can do in order to interact with law enforcement better is we need to begin teaching our children a code of conduct and how they should interact with the police.
So you don't think that's being done?
No, I really don't think that's being done at all. I really like this poem by Leslie Honoré entitled Backpacks, which I got from Reverend Beverly Biddle. She sent me. It speaks to how we can help to keep our children safe when they're interacting with the police, and we'll leave a description to the poem. And in that poem, it does say that you need to be respectful. It does say that you need to listen to what is just. I mean, someone asks you some crazy stuff, Debbie, that's different. But a lot of times when I watch a lot of the videos, it's already sort of like a negativity or this defensiveness that is already brought just interacting with the police from the
I
beginning.
have a problem with that. I really do. Because it feels like one, it's saying that it feels like it's almost a submissiveness to what is. Now, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that I think that we don't need to be aware of the problem. Like, we definitely need to be aware of the problem as a, it's a public safety measure, I think, at this point. It's like a health measure, a health mm-hmm. risk to be Black and have an encounter with the police. So yes, you need to know about the risk. Mm-hmm. But I think to say that you have to perform in a certain way, to perform your humanity, takes away the responsibility for the police to be different.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying being respectable is...
What I'm saying is that you get to be a law-abiding citizen and the police mm-hmm. get to respect you. So you're mm-hmm. What I'm hearing is that you're placing emphasis mm-hmm. on Black people being different in order to not be killed.
I'm saying that
it doesn't matter. Even mm-hmm. if you are, they mm-hmm. still are the problem and they still can and will kill you.
Well, I can't control what a police officer is doing, and I'm Black, so I can give you my black experience. And when a police officer pulls me over, then I am saying, sir, I am saying being respectable, you know, mm-hmm. and because I'm trying to get through the situation so I can get home.
But what I'm saying is that even if you do that, you may not get home.
I'm saying, but you have a much better chance of getting home if you do that.
Okay. And this is what I'm also saying.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to say is that there are episodes, there are like, that's not something new. And I mm-hmm. think people do that. Like the talk is not about the birds and the bees for Black families. It's about how to survive encounters with the police. Like, that's not something new. There have been episodes on TV where they have done that, like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, mm-hmm. Family Matters, mm-hmm. Black-ish. Mm-hmm. They've all gone through that. But what mm-hmm. I think, and so it's like, I don't think that that's not happening, but I also think it's important to recognize the way that you frame that need, because the issue is not about Black people not being respectable.
No, it's didn't about, say that.
Okay.
But no, I didn't that, say that. But what I am saying is that mm-hmm. if you you look at some of the videos, it's not always being every, and this is a problem that Black people know that this is a problem, that they do not necessarily interact well with the police because there's already the fear that you're going to be attacked, that you are going to be, that you're being profiled. All these things are going through your mind, that I'm Black, I'm being profiled, I'm being put over because I am Black. I already am, you know, I always say the number one crime in America is being Black and poor. And, mm-hmm. you know, so the problems that come along with that, so you already feel some kind of way when you're being pulled over. That doesn't make you want to be respectable and be nice and, you know, give your license over if you, you know, if you have a license. So I'm just saying that I can understand the frustration when you're pulled over and why you would not be respectable to someone doing that to you. And I'm saying that by training yourself to be that anyway gives you a better chance to not have to sort of silence my ego, because I'm just trying to get home safely. And that's what requires me to do that, to get home safely, then I will. That's okay. What I'm saying.
Okay, I think I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to rephrase it. I'm going to mm-hmm. take it into context. I'm going to use my African American studies major degree and bring it, take it back to history and bring it to what I think I hear you're saying.
Okay.
What I think I hear you're saying is that we need to get back to doing what activists did in the civil rights movement when they actively trained to be nonviolent against provocation. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is that the police provoke that type of energy. And so you're saying that Black people need to, as a defense mechanism, learn how to be non-reactive mm-hmm. to that type of behavior mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. when they deal with the police. Because yes. I'm a Black person, had an incident with the police mm-hmm. where I was not wrong. I was trying to explain what the issue was, but mm-hmm. the police was being very belligerent.
Okay. And that's understood. I'm just saying that it shouldn't even start off that way. And I'm saying that I have been, you know, in my 20s, and I know the frustration of all of that and not knowing how to control it. I already had an attitude already, and I was already expecting the fight when the police officer came to my window. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that I had to calm that down,
right,
and which be takes respectable.
Training.
Right.
like they did
Now,
in
if he's
the civil
been
rights movement.
belligerent, that's different. That's different because it's changed now. I'm just saying that we need to begin the conversation off with being respectable. Now, what happens after that, it can fall off the rails, you know.
Okay, so I feel like you just walked back your point
Yeah,
by
but I'm just
making.
saying, but I want to be clear, because if someone is, I mean, literally intimidating you and treating you so unfairly, how can you remain your composure? That's
That's through
impossible.
training, through training.
I'm not asking
And
anyone to
that's
do
exactly
that.
what they did in the civil rights movement.
But that's not
They
what
would
I'm
go through
asking.
seminars with people spitting on them and hitting on them, and
Well,
they had were trained to not react.
I'm not asking that. I'm not asking that. I'm saying that when you're first pulled over, you've
A lot of
already
times when
gone
you're
to.
first pulled over, police yield, they throw around their power in a way that incites people to be provoked. They provoke you by throwing around their power.
Right, but I'm not saying that if someone is now breaking the law, that, and we'll get to that in another segment, is breaking the law, that you shouldn't react because someone's breaking the law. The police officers do break the law, and you need to say something about that, and you may have to react to that. But I'm saying
Well,
that
then
if
you won't
no,
be getting home.
well, you know, that's the well, I'll we'll get into that a little bit later about this other story that I found, and you know, it's tragic. It's tragic.
Okay. Well, this segment has gone way over, so let's keep it
It's,
moving.
yeah, it's been good though.
So it's time for Make You Laugh. And this week, I found a couple of things. Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know who he is, right?
He's a great scientist. Well, I
That's
don't know if he's a
right.
great
He's a great
scientist, but
scientist. Did you ever see the Cosmos on Netflix? I love that. I loved everything.
I have a great
Anyways,
quote by him too on that
oh
show.
really?
I can't remember it.
Anyways, he got in some Twitter beef with an unsuspecting company this week or recently. So he tweeted on Twitter, "The good thing about science is that it's true whether or not you believe in it." And he got some backlash from Steak-ums of all people. And so, they replied immediately, "Log off, bro." And then they sent another tweet that said, "The irony of Neil's tweet is that by framing science itself as true, he's influencing people to be more skeptical of it in a time of unprecedented misinformation. Science is an ever-refining process to find truth,
It
not a
is.
dogma. No matter his intent, this message isn't helpful." And so I kind of have to go with Steak-ums on this. They're
Yeah.
right,
Let me get a Steak'em
Oh no, don't do that.
sandwich.
But they are right. They are right. So I was like, "Oh wow, they got you, Neil." And then the other thing, I'll post it in the show notes. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can just look below, and if you're listening, you can go to anchor.fm/breakingitdownshow to see the show notes. But there is a cute video of it reminds me of the mother bear that we talked about in a previous episode. But this cute episode of these twin babies that like team up against their grandmother to try to escape their nursery. So it shows, it's like from the nanny cam, and grandma's in the room, the door's open, one of them is by the door. So she goes to pick him up and it's like, "Nope, you gotta get back." And while she's walking him back, or walking, I don't know their genders, walking the baby back, the other twin is going towards the door. So she puts the baby down, and then she does, it's like back and forth, I want to say like 3 and 4 times. So cute. Grandma finally wins. She's able to close the door. And they were definitely teaming up and taking grandma for a whirl.
Giving grandma a hard time. Come
They
on
were. They gave grandma a hard time.
now.
But they were so cute. They were so cute. Yeah.
For our next topic, we'll be talking about The Talk and returns without Sharon Osbourne. So
Wow.
you sound like so sad about that.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah,
The CBS daytime talk show, The Talk, returned this week without Sharon Osbourne. The show had a 1 month unscheduled hiatus after Sharon blew up on her co-host, particularly Cheryl Underwood, during a discussion on race that involved her protecting her friend and fellow countryman, Piers Morgan. We'll get into Piers Morgan a little bit later in the segment, but Cheryl Osbourne tweeted March 9th defending Piers' conversation that he had with other co-hosts on his show in Britain. And it said, "I am with you. I stand by you. People forget that you're paid for your opinion and that you're just speaking your truth." So that's what Cheryl Osbourne tweeted out the day after another blow up in Britain. You know, and all this stems from the Oprah and Meghan and Harry interview.
And we
So
talked about that on another episode too.
we did. And in that episode, I said, heads will roll. And this is just more fallout from that interview. And I think there are going to be more fallout. So in the new episode that aired April 12th, the talk opened with Cheryl Underwood providing a brief introduction in which she said that the episode would be centered around the steps towards the healing. And yeah, it was kind of like
It's
weird,
so
but
dramatic,
yeah,
DJ.
it was dramatic. It was really dramatic, you know. And let me do a dramatic read, you know. So do you think that Sharon Osbourne has that much power on the talk? That she has enough influence to get producers to fire another co-host.
I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, I don't watch the talk, and I don't know who the producers are. I don't know why that's a question, but I just feel like she's Sharon Osbourne was being a white woman, you know, like she was a white woman, white womaning, being, you know, other people call it white fragility. I think it's white violence, you know, like I don't know.
Well, I think that she did. So previous talk hosts like Leah Remini and Holly Pete Robinson, I think Holly Robinson Pete is her name now,
Yeah,
I think,
Holly Robinson Pete.
have recently come forward and exposed Sharon's pettiness, her racistness, racist comments and antics behind the scenes. Some of them, those comments have implied that Sharon had something to do with them being let go from the talk. I think it was Leah Remini recently exposed that Sharon Osbourne would frequently refer to then co-host Julie Chen, who was a Chinese woman, as wonton and
No.
slanty eyes. Wow, yeah. According to the same
Wow.
sources, Osbourne referred to lesbian co-host Sarah Gilbert as a pussy licker and fish eater.
Oh, hell no. What?
Yeah, and these are women
I
that
mean,
I
this is what I'm
respect.
talking about. That's that whole white violence BS. Oh my gosh, you're gonna get me cursing today,
Right. And so
DJ.
Osbourne had
Oh.
said, racist on the coming itself, on the show itself. She said that Meghan Markle, to include that she said she ain't black, and she don't look black to me, in 2018 of an episode of The Talk. So I think that she is a person who has a really, she's racist. Okay, look, and don't even realize it. And we're gonna get
That's
into.
what white, that's what a white woman, when I say being a white woman, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So
That's that whole thing.
the white fragility, or
White
what you
violence.
call
Like,
white
yes,
balance, you
exactly.
know.
Right. So that whole notion of white fragility, like when white people feel fragile when it comes to acknowledging their whiteness and their racism and their privilege, that actually shows up as violence. And I think that Sharon's behavior on that show when she attacks Cheryl Underwood is the classic example of that, right? And I want to credit Sonya Renee Taylor for naming the white violence, because that's what it is. And I think when we are actually succumbing to whiteness when we call it white fragility. But so what happens if you watch that clip? And we can put the link
The
in the
link.
show notes. But the Sharon is aggressive and yelling at Cheryl Underwood, and then tells her, "You better not be crying. I should be crying. How are you a victim when you are attacking someone else?"
Right.
That is whiteness to me. And that is delusion. And it needs to be, whiteness needs to be in the DSM. Like, it needs to be a diagnosed mental delusion. It does.
Yeah, racism to me is psychotic, you know.
It's violent.
But Cheryl Underwood did admit that on the episode, April 12th episode, that she did have a tear in her eye when Sharon was berating her on the broadcast. As you said, she said, "Don't you cry. If anyone should be crying, it should be me." So, and you know, and Cheryl went on to say that she did have a tear in her eye because she said that she didn't want to be perceived as the angry Black woman. And that's the reason why she didn't want to react, because her reacting in a, I guess, at the same nature as Sharon should proceed. So it was scared her, you know? And I felt that Sharon tried to provoke Cheryl. And in other words, she was trying to get Cheryl Underwood to come out of pocket. And luckily, Sharon didn't bite and it didn't work. I feel as though Cheryl won by staying calm. And what are your thoughts on feeling
so
as though...
I think this is exactly what we were talking about in the last segment. About how Sharon was using the power of whiteness to provoke a Black woman to fall into the narrative of the angry Black woman, right? And what Cheryl was saying when she was saying she was scared of that is Cheryl understands the power of the controlling image of the angry Black woman. So Black feminist theology, shout out to Patricia Hill Collins, again, using my degree.
Mama, using my Go ahead, degree. You paid for it, you know, you get the degree.
I'm finally using it, mama.
Yeah, I love it.
Right? But understands that the way to ensure oppression of a people is to label them and dehumanize them and put them into certain archetypes so that it makes sense to have a racist, oppressive stance against them. So for Black women, generally we see a couple of archetypes called controlling images. We see the mammy. We see that with like movies like The Help, Gone with the Wind, right? We have the Jezebel. That's the hypersexualized Black woman who seduced master into her bed, right? Right?
Master.
And then we have the angry Black woman, right? And so we also have, you know, there's other controlling images like
The diva, the bitch,
the welfare queen and all of that. All of those images are used to ensure the intersectionality of oppression for Black women and gender and sometimes economics as well. And Black, you know, I understand the notion that Cheryl was, she didn't want to be labeled that because that could end her career.
Yeah, you know, and I think what's the woman named Monique? She made it. I mean, I think her point really clear about if you're labeled as difficult in Hollywood, your career is basically over.
Yeah, yeah, and we, you know, and thinking about even Gabrielle Union when she talked about her experience of going up against another Brit, Simon Cowell on America's Got Talent, how you know she talked about how he tried to like. In her career or, you know, like sabotage her because of his poor behavior. Her standing up for that labeled her as being difficult and she's no longer on the show.
Right. Exactly. Right. So it's very, very true. So what is your breakdown? Well, let me give my breakdown first before you give your breakdown. So the reason why I want to do that is because I like what you're saying. So from Sharon Osbourne's own mouth, she said that to Cheryl Underwood, "What's it got to do with me? How can I be racist about anything, about anybody or anything in my life?" So that goes back to your white balance. That's a definition to me of white balance right there in your sense about what's it got to do with me. How can I be racist about anything, anybody or anything in my life? Sharon Osbourne showed in that episode, The Talk, how blind she is about racism in America, Britain, and the world. It sheds light on how she has managed to be at the age of 68 in 2020 and be so unaware she has this privilege that she's inherited. She speaks as though she's exempt from the conversation when in fact she perpetuates it.
Absolutely.
Racism is a complex problem, and we need to surround the conversation with a broad perspective, and it requires many voices, many perspectives, and a multifaceted approach to correcting it. And what is your breakdown from
Well, I
that?
mean, I don't watch the talk, so it's no sweat off my back that she's not on the show anymore. I hope that, in, so I had this professor when I was in college, and he would always bring in things from like the media to sort of explain the concepts that he was teaching. So I think that that episode of the talk is something that could be shown in sociology classes, shown in maybe classes on whiteness studies, which needs to
And you know,
happen.
CBS has removed the episode from the internet. I
Really?
tried finding it. I can send all the other ones, couldn't find
Oh
that
my
one.
gosh, that's awful because it's a great example of what white violence looks like. I will just also say to wrap it up that I'm not saying that all white people are white women, like all white women are white women are white womaning and what are
Because I
Karens and
have
all of that.
many allies that are white who've that you know that I
Right,
respect
one of my
and
best
love.
I'm not going to do that. But what I'm saying, is that there is a way that whiteness exists, and it's about the consciousness. It's about the consciousness of denying privilege, denying that it's this way. The consciousness of whiteness is the reason why the world is the way it is right now. We'll just say that. If you look, there is no place that has not been colonized by white people. There is and I would say that the experiment of democracy in the United States is failing because of whiteness.
All right. That's the broad stroke. So yeah, we can add another 30 minutes to the conversation if I was to go into depth about that. But yeah, I feel you. In our effort to bring you light, optimism, and hope, this is our inspired segment of the show. So I saw a story on CBS this morning about a Buffalo police officer, Carol Horn, who was fired in 2008 after she intervened in an arrest where a fellow officer used a chokehold on a handcuffed suspect named Neil Mack. She said she thought Neil was going to die that day. This African American mother of five had to fight through numerous administrative court hearings. Repeatedly, she explained she was trying to stop her white coworker, Gregory Kowalkowski, because she saw him using excessive force, including a chokehold against a man who was handcuffed. She felt it was her duty as a police officer to intervene, and she explained to her superiors and to the courts why she felt her actions were justified. Still, she was terminated months before she was due to receive her full pension. This week on Tuesday, her termination was reversed and is now, that's 15 years later, is now eligible for her nearly $1 million pension after a New York State judge agreed reversing Ms. Horn's firing after almost 15 years later.
That's crazy,
The
but that's
judge,
great.
that's great, but it's sad that it took 15 years. And
Yeah.
this is a mother of five, okay? The judge said it is not too late to correct a wrong. The ruling also contains a note that the city of Buffalo has since passed a law in Ms. Horn's name in support of officers who stop colleagues from continue committing brutality, and also reference other high-profile police killings.
What's her name?
Her name is Carol Horn,
Carol Horn.
Carol, and
Okay,
Horn
black
is
woman,
HO.
I see
All right.
you. I see you, Carol
I
Horn.
see you, Carol, and
That's
she's
an
so
under-controlling
beautiful.
image though.
She's so
The
beautiful.
the strong black woman.
Yeah, the strong she and she's definition of a strong black woman.
But that's another controlling image as well. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, and we didn't get into that. We can turn that conversation another time about how do we what are strong black women who are three-dimensional personalities in media? But Neil Mack, the victim, says he is thankful for the officer Horn. She saved his life.
That's wonderful. That's great, DJ. That's a beautiful
And
story.
not done it. Like, it's one more fact.
Oh, really?
The the white officer Greg Kowalkowski, he served 4 months in federal prison back in 2018. This is 10 years after that happened for a different arrest where he used unlawful and unreasonable force against four black teenagers. So 10 years later, after that, he did serve time
For something else,
for
though,
something else that he did.
because he was the problem the whole time.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So it just further, indicted him that in 2008, what she was saying was in fact the truth.
Right,
But it
right.
took 15 years for that. And to
And
me, in
black woman in this
2008,
case.
after that happened, I mean, 18, they should have started to look at her case. But it took
Right.
into 2020 to see that. So it's just crazy. And I'm just so glad that God bless this woman,
Yes.
and her five
Yes.
children.
Yes.
Yep. So that's all for me. In
All
terms
right.
of, hope that inspired you. Hopefully that showed you. But to me, that is the definition, my definition of a strong black woman.
We can talk about that on another
Yeah,
episode.
we will do a whole segment on that one.
All
Yes.
right. Well, do you have any announcements?
I don't have any announcements, no.
Okay. I have one. I just wanted to share with people because on our last episode and even in this episode, well, not really. We didn't name any books this time, but last week we referenced a lot of books for people to read. And we episode in the first episode when I talked about my book sale, I shared how much I love reading, and I wanted to share with people this platform called Scribd, and it's similar to
Audible.
Audible, except not only do they have audiobooks, they have ebooks, they have magazines, they have music sometimes too, like music scores.
Okay.
And it's set up, the platform is different, the subscription platform is different. Whereas Audible, you pay and you get a
Monthly.
credit for a month and you only have access to like one book. Whereas Scribd is more like Netflix, where you pay a flat fee and you have access to their library. I mean, you don't own it like with Audible, but I have a subscription and I have a link where people can try it out for 30 days for free. And I wanted to give people the opportunity to do that. So if they go to the link, I'll have it in the show notes, but if you go to bit.ly/readwithcourtney, all lowercase, all one word, you can try out Scribd for 30 days for free.
Oh, thank you. That I have an Audible account, and well, it's not a free book, but I pay for a credit every single month. And I'm not trying to, pull people in, because Audible does not give us, not sponsor ours. Even though if you're listening, Audible, nothing wrong with hooking us up. But I'll try Scribd as well and see if I like that too.
Okay, yeah, try it out.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps up our episode 9.
Yeah,
Six
exactly.
more to go before season one is over.
Do you have any shout outs?
I don't.
I do have one. I want to give a shout out to Perry Goldman. He went through our videos and liked and all, so thank you, Perry
Thanks,
Goldberg.
Perry.
Thanks, Perry. So I want to start giving some shout outs to people who are actually interacting with us, and hopefully we get more of that. And there was another guy who actually gave us a comment on Bad Baby. And I went to his page, and he's really obsessed with Bad Baby. So
Okay.
it's interesting.
Don't
So
make people shy, though, DJ.
yeah, well, I was told that people want their anonymity, so maybe we can give people a phone number where they can call in and they can remain anonymous and give their comments as well. So, maybe an idea for season two.
Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, you can reach to us on Instagram at Breaking It Down Show and Facebook at Breaking It Down Podcast. And how can they email us, DJ?
You can email us at emailing breakingitdownshow@gmail.com. That's breakingitdownshow@gmail.com.
Bye.
Till next time. Breaking It Down with DJ and Courtney is edited and produced by Designs by Courtney H. Music produced by Courtney Hinton. Thank you for listening.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review.